Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Stories to listen to when you drive. Volume 9, Story 1. This happened many years ago. I was an active duty Marine station in eastern North Carolina. Every weekend, I'd either hunt for hogs or deer, or just go camping. One day, me and a buddy just wanted to get away, so we grabbed our packs and headed out into the Croton National Forest. I have a 6-year-old purebred Dogo Argentino who can grab a hog scent from nearly a damn mile away. We walked on the beaten trail for 4 or 5 miles and branched off down another 2 miles, and we found what looked like a nice spot to camp. I had my Marlin 336 30-30 rifle on my pack and my Smith & Wesson on my side. It hit around 5:30 p.m. The sun was starting to fade. We popped up our tents, got a fire going, and broke out a fifth of Fireball whiskey. We took a few sips each. We weren't even buzzed. And it's about 6:30 by now, and dark. We both immediately got this weird, ominous feeling, kind of looked at each other. Tyson, that's my dog, is extremely well-trained, and I don't even keep him on a leash. He wandered around the campsite, and I left my tent vestibule open, and when he's ready to lay down, he just walks on in. And so I unzipped my tent, and we heard him barking viciously about 20 yards away, and I immediately think it's a hog. I grab my 30-30, and my buddy grabs his AR. By the time we looked up, Tyson is sprinting back through the woods at us and stops in between us and turns around and starts growling something fierce. I pulled out the spotlight, started shining it around, and we see or hear nothing. No birds, no ruffling, no wind. I tell Tyson, quiet, and he stops growling and just stared off into the woods. About 30 seconds later, he turned around and started barking again in the opposite direction. We had no clue what was going on, but my buddy, he takes his rifle and fires off a shot through the woods. North, east, south, and west. We heard a ton of brush cracking off in the direction Tyson was facing, and it slowly faded away. Both of us felt uneasy, so I kept Tyson with me, and we kept our rifles right next to us and opted not to drink. It rolled around to about 1 a.m., and we climbed into our tents and went to bed. I got woken up at about 1:30 a.m. on the dot by Tyson barking and scratching to get out of the tent. We climbed out. My buddy was already out of his tent with his AR and spotlight, freaking the hell out, looking in circles saying he's been hearing noises since we laid down and that Tyson had been growling since then as well. We stayed up until sunlight from that point, packed out, and got the F out of there as quick as possible. Never had a feeling like that in my life, and Tyson, a purebred Dogo Argentino with 2 years of training, has never acted like that. Story number 2. I've had a few strange occurrences in the woods. Most recent one, that was a few years back. It left me mystified and, to be honest, kind of shaken. First, I'm not the type that scares very easily. I spent about a decade in the Army, and through the course of that time, I was able to handle a lot of my fear, just based on situations I was in. I do not have an overactive imagination, but I am prone to hypersensitivity to my surroundings, which is a blessing, but can be a curse just as easily. I think a lot of service members and survivalists are this way. Anyhow, this was back in November. It was deer season, and I was out early. It was still dark. Subsequently, it was not early enough because I spooked a nice deer that was literally standing at the base of my tree stand. He saw me before I saw him and bounded off. I should have called it quits right then for the day, but I didn't. Now I wish I had, though. My tree stand is only about 75 yards or so from my house, so it's not like I was overnighting it in the woods. The stand is in the woods, though, not on the edge of a field or clearing, and looks down into a hollow with a creek running through it. I got down out of the stand at about 12:30 and headed in for some lunch. At about 2, I went back out and climbed up to catch the dusk nighttime traffic. I halfway considered taking my Ruger 10/22 and just finished the day out by bagging the 500,000 gray squirrels that had been prancing around all day, but decided against it. About 5:30, the sun was getting very low behind me and the woods were getting too dark to be able to make out much detail anymore. While I was sitting there contemplating on getting down or not, I thought I heard a faint feminine laugh. I did not think much of it, as there are a couple of other houses that theoretically a woman's laugh could be heard from if it carried right where my tree stand is at. About that time, something white caught my eye moving behind a tree about 50 yards in front of me and slightly right of my stand. I was not sure what I was seeing, and as I was processing the low light tricks that nature could be playing, I saw it again to my front left about 40 yards out. This time I caught a little better angle, and it looked somewhat like a young lady in a white nightgown circa 1920s or 30s peering out from behind a tree. As soon as I saw it, it was gone, though. I was still thinking in my mind that the setting sun behind me and the darkness that was overtaking the hollow in front of me were just causing me to see things out of the corner of my eye. It was about that time that I realized I had not heard the rustling of a squirrel in several minutes. The woods had gone completely silent. To my right front, I saw the white movement again at about 30 or 40 yards out. This time, it distinctly looked like a woman in a white nightgown, turning like she was going to run in the opposite direction from behind a tree. All three of these sightings happened extremely fast and really could have been light tricks, but I'm not so sure anymore. Either way, I hopped down as I decided I wanted no more of hunting that particular day. There are several deep ravines in the woods behind my house, and there is zero possibility that a person could get down in there without making a ton of noises, which I never heard. It was just weird. I did not necessarily feel threatened, but I was very uncomfortable. I've never seen or heard anything in those woods since then, though. Story number 3. I've had a few creepy experiences in the woods. The weirdest one happened to my sister and me. There's an old abandoned dolomite mine in Sherwood, Tennessee, that we used to camp at quite a bit when we were off caving on the weekends. Let me describe it quickly so the rest of this makes sense. A dirt gravel road leads up a mountain to the mine. Just outside the mine entrance is an area where vehicles can be parked, but it's surrounded by woods and a stone embankment, so you can't really drive off into the woods. The mine entrance is a big hole in the hillside with a sort of kidney bean-shaped cavern behind it. Directly opposite the entrance is a steep talus slope that's impossible to drive and doesn't really go anywhere. The walls, being dolomite, are sort of light in color. In other words, there's no place to go with a vehicle except the bean-shaped room inside the cavern, and nowhere to park outside it except the parking area in front of it. My sister and I had gone caving by ourselves, and were meeting up with the rest of our caving friends at the mine that evening so that we could all go to the same cave the next day. There were 8 friends, each with their own vehicles. We were meeting that night. Anyway, my sister and I ran late on our trip and didn't get to the bottom of the mountain until about 1:30 a.m. We saw one of my friend's little Renault parked at the bottom of the mountain, which we thought was weird, but then realized the road had just been graveled, so he probably rode up with the others in one of the trucks. A little over halfway up the mountain, my sister and I both got a really creepy something isn't right feeling that got stronger as we went up the mountain. When we got to a wide spot in the dirt road, I decided to park and walk up the rest of the way so we could be stealthy in case something really was wrong. I turned my truck around to face downhill for a fast getaway and stashed my keys on a binder on the frame under it so my sister could get them if I couldn't. Seriously, it was a really, really creepy feeling. We both took our rock hammers with us since we didn't have any other weapons. We walked up along the edge of the road, our lights out, so we wouldn't be highlighted against the new gravel. We got to the mine and didn't see any vehicles outside it. Most of us camp inside the mine, but my friend Jim always camps outside it. I'd been there with the same group just the week before and knew where Jim usually parked his truck. I figured he must not have made the trip. We cautiously entered the mine and nothing. No trucks, no people, nothing. Now we're really worried because we saw my friend's Renault parked at the bottom of the hill and couldn't imagine why he'd leave it. We knew there was a lot of drug activity in the area, and we're worried our friends had run into some problem of some sort. Anyway, you can see the whole room in the mine that everyone usually camps in at one glance, but we walked around it anyway. As we walked around it, I heard the pinging of a cooling truck engine and thought I heard my friend Alan's voice murmur something and laugh. There were definitely no people or vehicles there, though. That was it. We left the mountain and camped down the main road a ways. The next morning, we waited for a while, but no one came down the mountain, so we went caving on our own. That evening, we ran into a group at a restaurant, and they all wanted to know why we didn't show. They said they'd gotten to the mine at 9 p.m. and were each parked in the exact same spots they'd been the week before, including Jim's spot outside the entrance. We walked right through those exact same spots when we were looking for them. They never would believe that we'd shown up, though we somehow knew the road had been graveled since the weekend before. They all thought we'd just blown them off. On a side note, during your caving trip the next day, the one we missed by missing them, a very large rock had fallen in a crawlway right behind my friend Jim. That's the spot my sister usually caved in when she's with us. So in all likelihood, our missing meeting saved her life. Still, the whole thing was extremely weird, and I have no explanation for it. Another weirdness was a friend and I were contouring around the mountain on an old logging road on our way to a seldom-visited cave when we heard something large move some bushes and branches on the hillside below us, as if we startled it. The weird thing was, it wasn't followed by the noise of something taking off through the brush. As we walked to the cave, I kept thinking I heard soft footfalls pacing us from below on the hillside, stopping when we did. We reached the cave and went inside. The cave entrance is in a bluff, set back in a rock embankment, such that you can look down on the entrance from two arms of embankment that extend out from the hillside. The entrance room of the cave slopes down steeply to the bottom of the cave, where a small, narrow passage leads deeper into the cave. We were circumnavigating the bottom of the entrance room when we heard footsteps outside the entrance on the extension of the embankment. We started back up the slope towards the entrance and yelled, "Hello?" A huge rock, a little larger than a football, came sailing in the entrance directly at us. It was airborne about 60 or 70 feet, and we just had time to dodge it. My friend yelled, "Hey!" Another rock sailed in right at us. We looked at each other and ran down the slope to the smaller passage at the bottom of the cave. As soon as we were in a small passage, we heard something coming down the breakdown talus slope toward the bottom of the cave, bellowing more loudly than would be humanly possible. It sounded like it was yelling, "Hey!" over and over again, mimicking my friend's "Hey!" We bolted down the narrow passage crawlway as quickly as we could, around a bend, and stopped. Whatever was out there was throwing rocks into the passage and still bellowing. It sounded like it had started after us, scrabbling sounds and the sound of small dislodged rocks. Stopped when the entrance light couldn't be seen anymore or the passage got smaller, and just decided to throw small rocks at us and bellow. This went on for about 20 minutes. When it quieted, I started back toward the sound because, well, I'm curious and stupid. As soon as I got around the bend in the passage, where my light would have become visible to it, it started bellowing and throwing small rocks again. My friend and I quickly headed to the bottom of the cave, hoping not to be followed, where we lingered nervously for about 6 hours. At that point, we realized if we didn't leave, we'd be walking back to our trucks in the dark. We had no further problems on the way back. I personally think it was a Bigfoot that was ticked off at us. My friend thought it was some sort of supernatural thing. On later caving trips, I frequently had experiences that led me to believe Bigfoots are real, and not nearly as few in numbers as most people think, though none of our other experiences were as scary as this one. Next story. This is a story a friend told me, and her husband backed her up. I trust them completely. My friend, I'll call her V, opened a daycare in Oklahoma along with her sister. The building the daycare was in had been a daycare for many years, and V knew and had worked for the previous owners. It was in the middle of a strip shopping center. Even though most of the customers didn't know it, there had been several different sightings of a dark shadow man at this daycare for many years. It didn't attack anyone, but would be seen entering or leaving the room. While V owned the daycare, several strange things occurred also. There was a front door with an electronic bell and a back door with several rooms in between. The back door was not something that could easily be opened and slipped through. While there were not clear lines of sight, if you stepped to the doorway of most rooms, you could see all the doors of the other rooms. One time while working there late one night with everyone in one room, a shelf and its contents were thrown across the room in another room. Often, wooden blocks would be found thrown around. There were multiple instances, and I don't remember them all. Here's the one that stands out most in my mind. When the spirit acted up, V could talk to it, and it would disappear for a while. One day, they had few kids in the daycare, and the spirit had been acting up. V put a sheet of paper and some crayons on one of the tables and told the spirit that they were going to leave the room and asked it to draw something for them. Everybody was accounted for, and they closed the door and waited. No one could get into that room without being seen by everyone else. When they went in, they found simple markings on the paper, as if made by someone with poor control of the crayon. Next story. I've seen people disappear twice. Once, my dog and I were walking across a set of soccer fields on our college campus. I noticed that about 60 feet behind me, someone else was crossing the soccer fields. Nothing unusual about this, as it was a college campus after all, but being female, I'm especially vigilant about keeping an eye on people behind me. My dog noticed the guy too, but didn't react oddly. Suddenly, he just wasn't there. My dog froze, I froze, he was gone. No trees or objects to disappear behind. We were in the middle of a group of soccer fields, and suddenly he was just gone. It gets weirder. Several weeks later, I was in front of a 7-Eleven store at the edge of campus. This is out by Melbourne, Florida. There's an intersection near it, and the road that crossed the road the 7-Eleven was on has a sidewalk along it. The sun was setting in the direction of the crossing road, but you could see a guy about 500 yards up the road walking toward the intersection. He was just a tiny shadowed figure against the setting sun. There were a couple of people a little closer than he was, also walking in the direction of the store. My dog froze and her hackles went up and she started snarling. I had never seen her before or ever again react like this. She was staring directly at that tiny silhouette going nuts. She ignored the other people walking towards the store. She was clearly staring at the more distant figure. Oddly, I wondered to myself if it was the guy we saw disappear. Don't know why I thought it. It had been weeks since the episode. I tried to get my dog out of there. She was a Great Dane mix, huge, and she wasn't budging. And to tell the truth, I wanted to see who it was. I had the oddest conviction that it was the guy who had disappeared. By the time the guy got close enough for me to see who it was, my dog was straining at the leash, snarling and snapping at him. I had to pick her up and stagger off with her to get her out of there. It was, indeed, the same guy. He gave us a dirty look and entered the store. He was Middle Eastern and kind of on the small, slender side. Not a physically imposing guy at all. But my dog behaved like she wanted to kill him. It's the only time in her life I ever even heard her growl, let alone snarl. The second time was also in Melbourne. My friend and I were driving over the bridge across the Indian River towards Melbourne. My friend at the wheel, and we saw a guy in dark pants and a blue jacket step off the curb of the walkway along the side of the bridge, walk into the middle of the road, and disappear. Neither of us said a word. My friend finished driving over the bridge, pulled off the road, sat there for a moment, then said, "Did you just see that?" I said, "The guy in the blue jacket who stepped off the curb, walked into the road, and disappeared?" "Yeah." We decided to drive back over the bridge to see if he reappeared. He didn't. It was near the water, so we considered the possibility of a mirage, but the conditions weren't right, and it was odd that he was perfectly synchronized to the curb as if it was a mirage. The next day, she brought it up again. She decided that we must have been mistaken. I still know I saw a man disappear. This was in the early 80s, and my friend and I are still in touch. Time and distance have made it easier for her to accept, and she still asks sometimes if I remember the man we saw disappear. That close to water? I guess we can't rule out a mirage. But as I said, conditions weren't typical for one, and his movements sure looked synchronized to his surroundings. Next story. It was around 1966, and I was a boy of about 4 years old, and we lived in a trailer house in a trailer park on the outskirts of Wolfworth, Texas, which is near Lubbock, Texas, in the Texas Panhandle. Both the front and back doors of the trailer house were on the same side and opened into our front yard. The opposite side of our trailer house had only windows and no doors and was on an unpaved road running through the trailer park. My bedroom had a small 2-foot-wide by 1-foot-tall window about 5 feet off the ground in this wall. My desk was just under the window. Like most trailer houses back then, the windows cranked out from the bottom, so if they were open, it was hard for rain to come in. Our windows were open every night except in winter. Late one night, I woke and heard something outside my window. I got up, climbed up on my desk, and pulled the curtain aside. Staring in at me was a white Bigfoot. He was probably about 2 feet from the window, and his head was about even with the top of the window, which would have made him somewhere about 8 feet tall. We stood there eye to eye for what seemed like hours, but it was probably seconds, and he turned and walked away. I got up very close to the window to see where he went, but couldn't see but a few feet down from the trailer. I stayed listening and looking for several minutes, then climbed down and sat on my bed. Eventually, I fell asleep. I never told my folks about it because I knew it was not something that anyone would believe. I was advanced for my age, and while not aware of how the world worked, I knew how my world worked, and I would not be believed. At this time, Bigfoot was not generally talked about. It was several years later that the legend of Boggy Creek came out, and more of us general people began to hear about them. A few years ago, I got to thinking about the experience and started doing a little searching on the internet. I found some websites that listed Bigfoot sightings and found out that white Bigfoots have been sighted in eastern New Mexico, the Texas Panhandle, and North Texas, as well as in Oklahoma. Next story. This particular incident took place in about 1993 in Limrock, Alabama. There were, I think, six of us in our group. Cave entrances in the southeast are usually formed at the contact between the sandstone cap and the limestone layer beneath it. So we normally hiked in from the bottom of the mountain, then contour around the hillsides at the sandstone-limestone contact until we reached the cave. On this particular trip, the cove was fairly remote, and there wasn't good access to the hillside from the bottom. So we'd gone in from the top, leaving our trucks off a road on the ridgeline. We'd only just begun contouring around the hillside when we found two oddities, a sapling, 9 inches in circumference, we measured it, that was broken 6 feet up the trunk. The top part of the sapling had been twisted around 360 degrees, and the top was pointing downhill. The break was so fresh, the wood was greenish and looked wet with sap. About 10 feet directly uphill was a little teepee, about 14 inches tall, made out of sticks. So many sticks had been used that the walls were nearly solid. We stopped and considered these oddities for a bit. Opinions of their origin range from a Bigfoot did it, my opinion, to a crazy wind vortex that didn't move anything else near the sapling, including the leaves beneath it, and maybe a little kid was miles from the nearest home and decided to make a doll-sized teepee in the wood. We also noticed that there were large areas in which every sapling and bush was arched over with the arches all pointing downhill. This is also associated with Bigfoots, but there were so many of them that I suspect it was something more along the lines of wind and ice, or a really, really obsessive, compulsive Bigfoot. As we hiked, we began to hear wood knocking pacing us. If you've never heard it, it sounds like an axe hitting a tree. It was always two knocks, always about 100 feet uphill of us. About every 5 minutes, we'd hear the crack, crash, and thump of a tree falling just on the other side of the ridgeline, always directly uphill from us. It's not uncommon for us to hear the sound of wood knocking, always two above us. Sometimes, on other trips, three knocks would answer the two from across a cove or down a hillside, and tree crashing pacing us when we hiked to caves. I remember once hearing it on three different hillsides in one weekend. It's always directly uphill of us, keeping pace with us. Anyway, as I said, we hear it pretty frequently, so as always, we ignored it and continued hiking. All was fine until one of the guys in the group shoved over a dead, rotted tree stump about 8 feet tall. Within seconds of the dead tree hitting the ground, it sounded like all hell breaking loose up above us on the hillside as trees started falling one after another. For the next 5 minutes, it was a continuous crack, crash, boom, crack, crash, boom. We stood there, stunned. Even the Bigfoot non-believers had fear in their eyes, and we nervously acknowledged to one another that we had seriously ticked off something up there. We decided we'd better get moving and hiked at a much more rapid pace to the cave. For the rest of the hike, we were pelted with dirt and pebbles and occasionally smallish rocks. The cave had a pit entrance, and I've never been so worried that something was going to mess with our ropes. Upon exiting the cave about 5 hours later, we found our ropes and the gear we'd left outside the cave untouched. We didn't hear anything unusual on the hike back to the trucks, but then we never hear this stuff hiking back to the vehicles. We only hear it hiking to the caves. I think the knocking is a sentinel signaling to the other Bigfoots the location of strangers. The tree crashing is almost certainly a threat display. I've often wondered why we hear the knocking and tree crashings so often on caving trips and rarely on other types of hikes. I suspect part of it is that we aren't armed, so they don't feel they need to hide us completely. Also, my group always hiked unusually fast, and a group of people with ropes and packs marching purposefully through their territory might be cause to alert the rest of their group. The knocking always comes from above us on the hillside, and I think it makes them cranky if we surprise them by hiking in from above. In both of these incidents and the one where something threw large rocks at us and followed us, bellowing into a cave, we had hiked in from above instead of hiking up the mountain from the bottom. Next story. My parents' home, which we moved into when I was 13 years old, had a poltergeist and another stranger thing. The poltergeist was your typical door-slamming, item-stealing sort of poltergeist. Often items would go missing over a period of a week or so, then all show up together in some conspicuous spot where you were sure to see them. It also used to move items around, though never in front of us. We'd hear a crash or the sound of things being moved around and find a heavy hand truck had moved from its wide flat shelf to the floor 15 feet away. Once it took items from my father's workbench and laid them all out nice and neat in a row. Another time, I went in the bathroom to shower, undressed, and my dad knocked on the door to tell me I had a phone call. I turned to get dressed and found my clothes were gone. The other thing we had was stranger and scarier. The first time we heard it, I was 15. My father and I were in the backyard. He was skimming the pool and I was feeding my three rabbits near hutches. Suddenly we heard this long, tremendously loud and terrifyingly primal growl, snarl, that seemed to vibrate in the air around us. It started out kind of guttural and ended like a lion snarl. I thought it came from a point about 10 feet over the swimming pool, and that's where my dad was looking too. It wasn't the filter, which can make weird noises, but not like that. The rabbits froze and huddled down. My dad and I looked at each other and yelled, "Get in the house!" I wouldn't go without my scared bunny, so we grabbed the bunnies and ran into the house. Now, before I go further, I need to describe my dad. No nonsense, old-fashioned, not one to talk about paranormal things. His theory was that a rabid dog had somehow sneaked through our fence and was probably hiding under the deck. Maybe where the deck met the rise of earth around the pool. It was only a few inches off the ground. It would have to be a ventriloquist rabid dog with a good microphone and amp, in my opinion, but I could see my dad struggling to make sense of it and fit it into his reality. So, he sent me to the basement for a crowbar. When I came back upstairs, my dad had a shotgun and a flashlight. I'd never seen him take the shotgun out of his closet before. He inherited it from a friend and had never used it. I realized my dad was scared too. We went outside and looked under the part of the deck we could see under with a flashlight. Nothing. Next, he stationed me with a shotgun about 8 feet from him while he pried up boards where the ground rose to meet the deck. Needless to say, that kind of gun safety was very uncharacteristic of him. And again, I was struck by how scared he was. He pried off the boards and nothing. Some months later, my younger sister and I were in a finished room in the basement. I was helping her with her math homework. The dog, a corgi shepherd mix, and one of the cats was with us. The dog made one of those long, playful vocalizations shepherds do. From across the room, about 15 feet, something mimicked it exactly, but louder and seeming to come from a point about 6 feet above the floor. Dog, cat, and girls froze. Should we run? It sounded friendly. Yeah, like it just wanted to be friends, I said. Let's wait and see what it does. We were way more scared than that conversation makes us sound. No sooner were the words "see what it does" out of my mouth than we heard a very loud growl snarl from about 3 feet in front of us. Run away. All of us, dog, cat, and girls, bolted up the stairs. The growl snarl is hard to describe. If I had to choose one animal it sounded most like, I'd say a mountain lion, but then it mimicked the dog perfectly. We didn't get a sense of evil or even malevolence, just a very primal, I've caught the attention of something big and predatory. Unfortunately, we left her math book downstairs. After about 20 minutes, I tried to go downstairs after it, but when I was halfway down the stairs, the door slammed at the bottom of the stairs. Actually, it didn't slam shut. It just sounded like it slammed shut. I set a record vaulting up the stairs. No one was home but us, so we sat down on the front steps to wait for a parent to get home. About 20 minutes later, we got bored and risked going back inside the house. Soon after, we heard and felt the vibration of the basement-level garage door going up. Yay, someone's home. Except the garage door sounded like it only went halfway up. We ran outside to check on it. It was completely closed. Eventually, my father came home. We retrieved the math book, and we weren't eaten by a large ghost cat. My sister and I both felt that the growler and the door slammer garage door opener were two separate entities. That the thing that growls is an animal, albeit an invisible animal, and that our poltergeists were just taking advantage of the situation and getting into the act. A few months later, the dog Ginger wanted to go outside. My father opened the door and Ginger took off barking, racing around the corner of the house as if after something. My father, still on the front steps, heard an impossibly loud growl snarl, the same weird sound we'd heard in the backyard from around the corner. Ginger came charging back from around the corner, tail between her legs, ran up the steps, dove under a bed, and stayed there for 2 hours. My mother still lives in the house. My father is deceased. Mom has never heard the thing that growls, though she's heard a door slamming, voices when no one else is at home, etc. The poltergeist has been quiet since my father died. His activity is usually focused on my younger sister and me, and after we left home, my father. None of us live there anymore. Oddly, though, my mom is the one who is the most sensitive of all of us. For example, she dreams people's deaths before they happen, in detail. The clothing they're wearing, location, last conversation, etc. In closing, my sister and I both feel the thing that growls is a genuine animal, whether it's a spirit of a deceased animal or a bleed-through from some other time and or space. We never knew.